This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
People of Earth, you can't destroy. Welcome to Conspiracy, the show, the world's most trusted conspiracy theory podcast, with your hosts, Adam Todd Brown and Olivia Haidar.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Conspiracy the Show. I'm Adam Todd Brown.
And I'm Olivia Haidar.
And that makes us your hosts. Olivia, how's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. I actually, like, kind of mean that for once.
Nice. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
I'm fine. And I mean that. You know, I'm just fine.
For sure.
We are talking about some ripped from the headlines stuff. If I had a soundboard in reach, it would play the Law and Order sting right now.
Yeah.
You know, the quick one, not the jazzy bass line intro.
Oh, sure. I mean, I love the Law and Order theme, the classic Law and Order theme.
Have you ever seen Will Arnett play Air Law and Order theme?
No.
It is.
I don't think so.
If you can find video of it, it is one of the funniest fucking things you'll ever see.
Yeah,
it's that's so funny. Good.
I love that.
We're talking about Julian Assange.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked about him much because I think, like myself, you don't like Julian Assange that much.
I don't. I don't like him personally.
Yeah, he's
like, I have complicated feelings about his legal status, but like as a dude, I don't like him.
Yeah, I can tell he's someone I wouldn't want to hang out with.
Right.
And the thing about Julian Assange as it relates to WikiLeaks, it's kind of a separate the artist from the art kind of thing. And sure. Julian Assange himself has said, well, I'm like the face of WikiLeaks. I'm the one who, mm-hmm. when there's a controversy about something we've done, I'm the one who kind of takes that on.
Right.
And that means he gets a lot of heat for the things right. WikiLeaks does. But it also means he gets a lot more credit for what WikiLeaks yes. does than he might necessarily deserve.
Yeah.
So he's kind of become this celebrity just because of his role in the company, whereas there are so many other people working behind the scenes to actually pull this work off.
Yeah, he's a figurehead. He's a very toxic figurehead. Like, I don't know, if I were WikiLeaks, I would probably not want him to be the face of my organization.
Yeah. He stepped down, didn't he?
You know,
I'm pretty sure he's not the head of WikiLeaks anymore.
I mean, like, yeah, I feel like it would be tough living at the Ecuadorian embassy and doing that at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he is not anymore. He hasn't been for a while.
Yeah, we're mostly talking about the controversy surrounding the U.S. wanting to extradite Julian Assange.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where sometimes the cost of an actual free press and mm-hmm. legitimately free speech is sometimes you got to stick up for a guy who was accused of spreading shit on the walls inside the Ecuadorian embassy, among other crimes.
Yeah. And like skateboarding in the halls and like, and also a guy who was credibly accused of sexual assault by multiple women in Sweden. That, like, we cannot talk about Julian Assange without
Was it multiple women? I thought it was just one
fairly
woman.
Fairly certain it was two women.
Oh.
At least. Yeah.
Yeah. So all of that obviously complicates matters. Julian Assange yes. just kind of sucks.
Right. But all of that is kind of his, like, all of the shit on the walls and the rape and all that stuff is separate from why governments want to hunt him. And right. that makes it so annoying and complicated.
Right. So before we dive into the extradition saga, let's just get everyone up to speed on the Julian Assange story up to this point. Like really high level overview stuff. There's like movies about this. Yeah. It's very complicated.
I can't believe, are you, you're going to pass by the Julian Assange? That was in the notes, just for the people at home.
Yeah, I said Julian Assange saga in the notes, and then I put in parentheses Julian Assange.
I couldn't believe you would want to drop skip by it. That's great.
Well, hey, thanks. I appreciate it. Yeah, I just put it in there hoping you would reference it and notice it in the course of the podcast. He helped establish WikiLeaks back in 2006. That was a long time ago. That was when Bush was still in office. And a lot of their more inflammatory material early on had a lot to do with the Bush administration and our excursions in the Middle East.
Excursions.
Yeah, that's one way to put it.
That just makes it sound so much more lighthearted.
Yeah, it's a Tribe Called Quest song. That's all that is. They made headlines not long after when they uploaded documents that were supplied by U.S. Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning.
Yeah.
I have a very interesting relationship to this story that we will talk about at the end.
Yeah, I can't wait because, yeah, you told me about this.
In that I knew the hacker who turned Chelsea Manning in.
That's just, that blows my mind.
Yeah. But not at the time. It was like years and years later and at a weird point in my life where I was like, how are you showing up in my life right now? Right. This is weird. We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
But
it's kind of a bad sign.
In 2010, WikiLeaks released what has come to be known as the Collateral Murder video. You ever watch this video?
Yeah, I did.
It is.
Yep. When it came out.
Yeah. It's harrowing. It is. Basically a video of U.S. soldiers shooting civilians in Iraq from a helicopter, including a Reuters journalist and his assistant.
Yeah, purposely. They meant to kill these civilians.
Yeah, like Sarah Palin hunting wolves from a fucking helicopter.
Wait, did that happen?
Oh,
did
you don't know
about
that?
Was that during the
controversy? Yeah.
I don't remember that, but that just what
it came it up
makes me think of The Thing.
It like came up back when she was campaigning with John McCain.
Yeah, no, sure. But what if she was trying to stop a shapeshift again? We don't know.
You never know.
We don't know.
Yeah, Reuters had previously requested that video, as you might expect.
Sure.
Under a Freedom of Information Act request. And the government said no. I cannot imagine what their reasoning was. Probably something like it's not in the public interest. It's like,
sure, yeah.
Sure, it's not.
National security, blah, blah, blah. It was so easy for them to just hide shit under the terrorism banner, especially during this time.
Yeah, and still. Like, all they
Of course, still.
All they really ever have to say is national security. And
of course.
Shit just stays locked away for another 25 years. Release the Elvis files.
But like,
I want to know what part of Argentina he lived in with the Nazis.
Right. It's just like, it's hard to remember that mindset of like what it was like back in like 2006, 2007 when this was happening. Like, it was just everywhere. It was just all in the air, this like terrorism bullshit and like fear mongering. It was awful.
Yeah. So later that same year, 2010, WikiLeaks released the Iraq War Logs, which was a collection of more than 300,000 U.S. Army field reports from the war covering 2004 to 2009. Whole franchise, this was. They dropped two sequels in rapid succession, the Afghanistan War Logs, which was part two, and the Guantanamo Bay Files, which was part three, released in July 2010 and April 2011, respectively. And they also at one point released a bunch of U.S. diplomatic cables that were referred to as the Cablegate Files. Cablegate Files are arguably the most important thing they released.
Right.
For one thing, at least in part, it leads to the Arab Spring.
Yes.
Because the diplomatic cables were just exactly what it sounds like. U.S. diplomats from all around the world reporting back to probably the CIA about what they're learning in their respective countries. Right. And it was just basically everyone's corrupt. There is there are no good governments. Thankfully, the diplomatic cables changed that. And now there's several.
Right, of course.
Just fantastic governments operating on the world stage.
Look, the Arab Spring was a great thing and can't all last forever.
What is crazy about these files, and I didn't put all of this in the notes, but I don't know why that matters to people listening, but at one point, unredacted versions of all of these cables got leaked, which is obviously huge problem. And the way it happened, Julian Assange had given these files to a journalist and gave him an encryption key that he could read them with.
Yeah.
And that journalist used these files in part to write a book. And for reasons I will never understand, apparently he put that encryption key in the book, assuming it was a thing that would have just like expired after a day or two when Julian Assange gave it to him. And nope, it had not expired. Mm-hmm. And people were able to use that encryption key to unredact these cables. And at one point, Julian Assange is like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? I got it. I'm just going to release the unredacted files myself. And it's like, that's a weird course of action, bud. That might have been the wrong turn to take.
Personally, sure. I kind like that's, but like that's the sort of thing where I'm like, I kind of have to be like, okay, that's.
Well, his argument was basically that everyone who might be targeted because of these files needs to know also.
Sure.
So it can't just be a thing where those people are walking around unaware that they're named in these files that have been unredacted by the fucking intelligence community.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
His argument was, you know, everyone should know about it and adjust their lives accordingly. But him uploading those... Him uploading those unredacted files is what really got him on the government's radar. I mean, they were obviously... He was on the radar before that.
Of course, of course.
And so that's all the Chelsea Manning stuff. That is... I don't think the diplomatic cables came from Chelsea Manning, but all of the the Guantanamo files, the Afghanistan files, Iraq files, those combined with him releasing those unredacted cables, that's what gets the government after Julian Assange.
Right.
And they start investigating Julian Assange around that time. That was 2010, 2011. But it comes up at one point. I always talk about how when several different administrations all kind of agree on one thing, like buckle up, something is afoot. And that's obviously the case with Julian Assange.
Right.
Where Obama, Trump, Biden have all kind of been in lockstep when it comes to Julian Assange, even though Trump, you know, publicly was like, hey, I love WikiLeaks. I hope they find... those emails.
Right. But that's sure.
Trump being a fucking idiot.
Right.
But also the Obama administration, they were the first ones to start investigating Julian Assange. But fair is fair. In their case, they argued they could not indict Julian Assange because then they would have to indict the journalists who published this material also.
Right. Yeah.
It was Trump who changed course on that. And in 2017, started investigating Julian Assange with the intent to prosecute him under the 1917 Espionage Act, which was meant to fight spies in World War I. But what's interesting is Biden hasn't backed away from that either.
Huh, that is interesting.
And I know we have our hearts set on the idea that because a Democrat is in office, the U.S. government is good now. But
of course, I mean, that's my belief. Are you going to shatter my belief right now?
But just flash back to what I just said about the Obama administration being like, well, if we indict Julian Assange.
Right. Yeah.
We have to indict the journalists who published that material. So now if Biden indicts Julian Assange, are they going to indict the journalists who published that material? Because we are talking about the same administration that just disappeared an ABC News producer.
Did it disappear him? He just vanished from public life and lost his job and refuses to talk to anybody about it.
Yeah, it's like that episode of Black Mirror where you get blocked, but you're still alive. You just can't see faces and they can't recognize you. He's still alive, but like, is he?
That might happen. Of all of the Black Mirror things, that might happen.
Yeah, I could see that. They just put contacts in your eyes. Put a little,
yeah, or something.
Yeah. So around this same time, though, 2010, 2011, that is when the Sweden charges come up.
Yeah.
Where two separate charges, rape and molestation, are lodged against Julian Assange after a speaking trip to Sweden.
Right.
And that's what eventually compels him to seek refuge in the Ecuadorian embassy. Not so much the WikiLeaks stuff, at least not at first.
Yeah.
Because he was in London and it was going back and forth in the courts. And the courts finally decided, yes, you can be extradited to Sweden. That's when he holds up in the Ecuadorian embassy. Imagine being Ecuador and just having that fall into your lap. Like, oh, man. Why us? Right. Why us?
Because you can only imagine the story. Now that we know the stories of what he was doing in Ecuador, we can only imagine the stories that they had heard before he got there of like him and fucking London or whatever.
Julian Assange has alleged that some of the crazier stories about his behavior in the embassy in Ecuador were embellished at best because Ecuador just wanted him out of there. And we'll get to why they wanted him out of there.
Right.
They definitely wanted him out of there.
Uh-huh.
That's not even me hinting that we're going to get to Ecuador being not justified in wanting them out of there. They sure as shit should have wanted him out. It's like Julian Assange got kicked out of the Ecuadorian embassy for the same reason a lot of comedians bomb on stage. He failed to read the room.
Exactly.
He did the wrong material in front of the wrong crowd. That's
absolutely. It. Absolutely.
Up to 100%. That point, Ecuador. Up to that point, Ecuador was doing everything you would want them to do in a case like this.
Yeah.
Like they were following the fucking law. And Julian Assange fucked it up.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And that's the thing with this stuff in Sweden, where I'm like, obviously, when you've got governments and shit coming after you, like any personal shit is bound to get dragged up and thrown at you. And so, like, it doesn't matter if you could be squeaky clean and with like one mistake and they'll find it and they'll use it against you. But still, Julian, if you're on the run from the gun, you should know that they're going to look for this stuff. So why are you fucking doing it?
Yeah. Insane.
Because all of the sexual assault charges are from a speaking trip after he's already, like you're saying, like on the run, basically.
Yeah. So that was June 2012. When he checked into his room at the Ecuadorian embassy, he was there for a long time. Like they just, like you can see pictures and videos of his living quarters. They just converted an office into like a studio apartment. And if he did go crazy in there, I'm not surprised because.
Yeah, he treated that Ecuadorian embassy office like my high school bedroom.
He did. Doing fucking kick flips.
Jesus.
Slamming Mountain Dew.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
So he checks in June 2012. For more than 3 years after he entered the embassy, the Metropolitan Police kept a 24-hour in-person guard around the building on the off chance he might try to, I don't know, sneak out for a scone or fish and chips or something.
Okay, you're thinking it's to keep him in, not to keep other people out.
No, because he went to the embassy, and when he did that, he was out on bail, I think, for the rape charges.
Sure.
But either way, whatever he was out on bail for, he violated his bail by seeking asylum at the embassy. That was the Metropolitan Police's argument. So they thought just because he checked into the Ecuadorian embassy, they should be able to arrest him because of that. And they eventually gave up on that and just installed security cameras, which this is London, where there are not 2,500 security cameras pointed at this place already.
Right.
I've seen the TV shows. I know what's up. What do you mean you installed security cameras? I think you mean you turned one of the dozens that were in the area toward that door. And there were some points where it seemed like things were maybe going to go his way, like when Obama pardoned Chelsea Manning.
Sure.
I think a lot of people thought, well, is Julian Assange next? And it's like they would have announced Julian Assange first.
Right.
He is definitely not next. And Obama did that on the way out in January 2017. In April 2017, Jeff Sessions was like, no, we're still definitely trying to arrest that guy. Don't you worry. And by December of 2017, there were rumors that unnamed U.S. figures were planning to either kidnap or poison Julian Assange if this carried on much longer. And at first, he did have a lot of support from Ecuador, and that probably had a lot to do with the UK. When he sought asylum in that embassy, the UK government reached out to the government of Ecuador and was like, hey, you know, we have the right to come in there and arrest him, huh? And they were like, do you? That sounds like a threat.
Yeah. You sure you want to try that?
And so for a long time, Ecuador was like, man, Julian Assange can stay as long as he wants.
Yeah, absolutely.
They gave him citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was the next concern in the UK was that, well, next they're going to try and smuggle him out and get him to Ecuador so he can just live there instead of fucking making people clean up after his cat shit in the embassy in London. It seems like what got him in trouble, and this is where him not reading the room comes up, is when he started getting involved in the Catalan separatist movement in Spain.
It's Twitter. People need to fucking stay off of Twitter.
Yeah. He had been tweeting about it, and Spain was like, Ecuador, get your boy. You need to... He's taking shelter in your embassy. You got to tell him to tone this down or there's going to be problems. And he did not tone it down. Ecuador was just like, come on, bro. You got to understand. Spain's not cool like we are.
Again, like, Julian, put your goddamn phone away. Like, why are you on the run? You are hunted by multiple superpowers. Like, why are you fucking, why are you tweeting, brother? Come on.
Yeah, it just, I understand you still kind of have a job to do, but.
Kinda.
There were also stories that there were some countries that were able to, like, kind of talk him out of reporting on stuff. And it's like, oh, what was that about?
Sure.
But. The Ecuadorian government can't get the same leeway. It wasn't just that he got involved in that separatist movement, which made Spain obviously very angry.
Mm-hmm.
But even after all that, at first, Ecuador goes in and cuts his internet access after he tweeted about that separatist movement. But eventually, he was able to, like, smooth things out enough to where he got internet access again and was able to communicate with the outside world, and it seemed like Ecuador...
Well, he agreed to do the dishes for a week.
Yeah, exactly. He bought the groceries. And then WikiLeaks reports on some scandal involving the president of Ecuador while Julian Assange is still living in the embassy. And at that point, Ecuador's like, dude, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah. I would say if you're going to compromise your journalistic or whatever ethics in any case, it might be to not anger the one country on earth that will put up with your crusty ass.
Yeah, they were going so hard in the paint for him.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm a journalist. And it's like, no, you're really not. That's kind of why the U.S. is trying to extradite you.
Yeah. I mean, but also, I mean, yeah, like, but regardless, you know, you're also a person and you're staying in these in this country's goddamn place. You got, what do you expect, man?
He also sued the Ecuadorian government while living inside the embassy, which was probably not a step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. This is one of those things. It always blows my mind when people file lawsuits like this, knowing it means every detail of this story is going to come out. Like there was, did you read about this QAnon fuck who just bought a fucking mansion with the money he makes spouting QAnon shit on YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
And QAnon, of course, very opposed to pedophilia and child sex trafficking, was accused of having a relationship with a 15-year-old girl when he was 25. And instead of just being like, my bad, that's actually why I hate child sex trafficking, he doubled down and was like, she's a fucking liar and I'm going to sue her. And they were like,
oh,
okay,
interesting. Sue us.
And when he sued, all of these police records and documents from that underage relationship became public. Yeah. And he had to be like, oh, yeah, I did actually do that.
Here's his tactical error. Okay, two tactical errors in this guy's defense of himself. One, like you said, could have used it as an origin story. This is why I'm after sex trafficking.
Exactly.
Two, which would all another one, which would also work for the right wing libertarian chud market that he's trying to win over. He could pull the ephebophilia thing, say like she, you know, age of consent, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, that's an easy PR play for that crowd. They're a bunch of fucking creepy dinguses.
Yeah. But instead, he filed a lawsuit and Julian Assange filed a lawsuit against the Ecuadorian government. And that is where all the stories about Julian Assange's behavior in the embassy come from. The judge, I think it's an actual quote from his ruling, was that your rights have not been violated because the Ecuadorian embassy doesn't want to clean up after your cat. Because that was one of his arguments. They were like, fucking, will you at least clean up after your pets? And he was like, no, Julian Assange.
Yeah, I love the smell of cat piss.
I don't clean up cat shit. I report on corruption within your government.
Ugh.
So it wasn't going well. It was turning into an episode of Fear Thy Roommate, which is an investigation discovery show about roommates who eventually one of them murders the other. I love it so much. It's so good. So this was late 2018. And it's also, weirdly, the point where he starts getting a lot of celebrity support.
Mm-hmm.
And most notably, I don't know if most notably, but probably the weirdest, Pamela Anderson starts showing up at the Ecuadorian embassy.
Sure.
And
cool.
Publicly professing her support for Julian Assange.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, she reached out to the Australian Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, at the time, to urge him to protect Assange. And she says she just got a, quote, smutty reply back.
Yeah.
Which stands to reason. From what I remember, Scott Morrison was a piece of shit. And also, I'm sorry, but you can't be a world leader and be named Scott. Like, your last name can be Scott, but your first name can't be Scott. Come on.
You know what? Yeah, I agree with you.
It's just not, it's not a politician name. It's like it's a sporting name. Go play sports.
What if it was Scottard?
What if Scotty? His campaign Scotty, song, yeah. Scotty Does Know.
Scotty Does Know. I mean, look, I think, yes, we should have Montgomery Scott of the USS Enterprise as a president anyway.
That's sure. That's fine.
Scott Morrison sucks ass. He's an asshole.
He was a piece of shit. And Pamela Anderson issued a statement about reaching out to Scott Morrison and his reply. Here goes. Rather than making lewd suggestions about me, perhaps you should instead think about what you are going to say to millions of Australians when one of their own is marched in an orange jumpsuit to Guantanamo Bay for publishing the truth. You can prevent this. More like Damala Anderson. Fucking get him.
Yeah, that's a good statement. I mean, she has a point.
Yeah, it's a solid quote. And good for her. Like, I know there were other celebrities kind of speaking up for Julian Assange, but she was going for it.
Absolutely.
But also none of that helped. April 2nd, 2019, Ecuadorian President Lenin Moreno announced that Assange had violated the terms of his asylum. On April 4th, they invited Metropolitan Police inside the embassy to arrest Julian Assange and, of course, to have a spot of tea, because you can't invite someone in England and not have fucking tea. Again,
I've seen a spot of tea.
I've seen the TV shows. So.
Right.
So Julian Assange has basically been fighting extradition ever since.
Yeah.
And that fight is still ongoing. There have been some interesting developments. For one thing, Olivia, are you sitting down?
Should I be? I guess I can.
I don't know. Yeah, because we're both very up and active when we record this, pacing around the room full of nervous energy, you know, just to get the truth out there to the people.
Absolutely.
So here goes. I'm just going to say it. In August 2022, a group of journalists and lawyers sued the CIA and Mike Pompeo, alleging that they were put under surveillance by the CIA after visiting Julian Assange in the Ecuadorian embassy. There's no way that's true, right?
Sorry, my jaw just hit the ground.
I can't. That doesn't sound like my CIA.
No, that is not my CIA. Not my America.
I think I would sue the CIA if they didn't start surveilling me after I visited Julian Assange in the Ecuadorian embassy.
Yeah, like, hey, come on, man.
I'm a person, too. I have feelings. I deserve to be seen.
This is defamation of character.
Oh, you think I'm not a threat? Wait till this podcast goes up. Yeah.
Yeah.
The lawsuit was filed in a New York district court, claims the CIA had conversations recorded and data from phones and computers copied. No word on whether Pamela Anderson is part of the lawsuit, but it does include journalists Charles Glass and John Goetz. This is a quote from Richard Roth, a lawyer representing the group. The United States Constitution shields American citizens from U.S. government overreach, even when the activities take place in a foreign embassy in a foreign country.
Yep.
And that's important because, as John Ramirez reminded us on the episode about UFOs and the intelligence community, the CIA does not
absolutely
spy on Americans.
No, not ever. Never once. Except for these times.
Don't even suggest it. Yeah, except for all these times that Americans showed up to talk to Julian Assange.
Right. But that's not like indicative of a larger trend.
No. This is an isolated. This is an oopsie, you know?
Right. Yeah. Whoops.
Whoops. Sorry.
We left the microphones on or something.
It's also important because, as Julian Assange's lawyers have rightly argued, how do you get a fair trial when the people accusing you were also recording every conversation you had with your lawyers?
Yeah.
Like, it's literally no longer possible for him to have a fair trial.
Yep. That's true. The United States should give this up. This is a fool's errand.
And it really is going to set such a bad precedent.
Yeah.
Because I think that Obama administration policy still stands. If you indict Julian Assange, who's next? Like, what news outlets broke this story?
Right. It's a snowball.
And it's the kind of thing, again, it's one of those things where I know if you're a hardcore Democrat and you don't want to criticize Joe Biden, you're going to be content to just kind of let this happen without saying much about it because Julian Assange is a shitty person. But also it sets a precedent that whoever wins in 2024 can build on.
Yeah, yes.
And if that's Trump or DeSantis, one of these people who is very vocal about wanting to punish journalists, this right. is the shit they're going to point to when they say they have the grounds to do it. And that yep. fucking Supreme Court we got in place right now isn't going to say a goddamn thing about it.
No. And there would not be a very, like, there wouldn't really be an argument against that.
Yeah.
Other than a basic, you know, moral, ethical one, like, but that doesn't work on fascists. But, like,
no.
from a legal, like, this, it would set a precedent. Like, this is it. We can't do that.
And by not saying more about it, people are, you know, you're kind of complicit in it because you know, you get what you ask for a lot of times. It reminds me of the hot coffee lawsuit from the 1980s, where that woman got third-degree burns and had to have skin grafts because McDonald's wanted their coffee hot enough for truck drivers. And she was just made a mockery of on late-night talk shows for months and months, probably years on end.
Years. I remember people in my life making jokes about that case, and I definitely didn't hear it, like, at the time. So it had to have been years later.
There's a documentary called Hot Coffee, and what's really great about it is it covers that story. And what happened around that story was all this demand for tort reform, so people couldn't file frivolous lawsuits and put these poor innocent businesses out of operation forever.
Right.
And so it covers three other stories that are all the result of that. And one of them, these parents, their child was injured during childbirth by, like, some just obvious negligence by this doctor. And because of all the tort reform laws we passed, the financial award they could be given was capped at like $5 million. And they were like, that's cool. We're going to have to take care of this kid his entire life. That $5 million will probably get us until he's like five. But hot coffee. It's like, this is kind of the same thing. Like, we're going to be really pissed when Trump is literally locking up journalists in 2025.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to have a lot to do with us not being that angry that Julian Assange got locked up in 2023, probably. I doubt they'll get him this month.
No, they'll let him have Christmas.
We are nothing if not just.
Right.
This is a God-fearing nation. We will not deny Julian Assange of his Christmas. There's no way.
Absolutely.
No way he's not an atheist, right? There's no way.
Julian Assange?
Yeah.
Yeah, he must be an atheist.
He's gotta
be. I don't know, so I don't, but like, just, yeah. he just reminds me so much of that era of internet atheism.
So apparently the CIA thing, the way it worked, when people would show up to visit with Julian Assange, there was this security contractor who was at the door and made people turn over their electronic devices like it was Dave Chappelle and John Mayer touring together. And which, fucking both of you, get over yourselves.
Yeah, that just sounds like an extraordinarily unappealing show.
No, it happened, though. John Mayer and Dave Chappelle did tour together at one point and did this, like, joint fucking thing, and we're like, no phones.
I don't doubt that, but it sounds extremely unpleasant.
Yeah, I would hate every minute of it, except John Mayer can shred a guitar a little bit. Better guitar player than people expect. Sure. No, he is.
No, I know all of the guitar nerd shit about him being a good guitar player. I don't like his music, so it doesn't matter. He plays bad music well.
So when they would hand their devices over, this company, which was called Undercover Global SI, which, come on, just say CIA affiliated security.
Yeah. I mean,
just call yourself
all of these
that.
Things. Come they on. Have the more generic, the more sinister the names sound.
And these people are like, oh, sure, I trust you. Here, take my device. And of course, they just went and copied the contents of these devices and sent all of that to the CIA, according to the lawsuit. Allegedly.
Even if they're not working for the CIA. They probably love the CIA.
Oh, I mean, hell yeah.
Get into fucking security and shit if you don't like fetishize law enforcement.
Yeah, they work there because they failed the test that gets you into the CIA.
Right, probably. The psych test.
So the claims in that lawsuit kind of mirror the media's reaction to the Assange case in general. In December 2021, The Nation published an op-ed by John Nichols titled "The Prosecution of Julian Assange Absolutely Threatens Freedom of the Press." And it absolutely does. And what I found out in researching this is it turns out the sticking point here is the U.S. government's argument is that Julian Assange is not a journalist.
Right.
Because if he was, then what he did is... it's like Watergate shit. It's just reporting. It's reporting on government corruption. And you cannot, under the current constitution, you can't be prosecuted for that. That's not a crime.
Right.
But the government's argument is, well, he's not a journalist. He's just a guy.
Just some guy.
And the thing is, the Bill of Rights doesn't say that. The Bill of Rights isn't, but we're only talking about journalists. Like, it doesn't reference journalists.
It's, yeah, it's freedom of the... people who have a Bachelor of Arts in journalism.
From an accredited college.
From an accredited college.
Right. None of this online bullshit.
With a 3.0.
Send us an essay. Tell us about what groups you've been involved in. We'll decide.
This is all in the Bill of Rights.
But that is kind of the government's argument is, well, we get to decide who's a journalist. Like...
yeah.
And it's like, no, you don't. That's not what the point of the Bill of Rights was. It wasn't to protect the profession of journalist. It was to protect the free flow of information, as John Nichols puts it in his op-ed. So it's an absurd argument, but it's one that if Julian Assange is extradited, where's it going to go? It's going to go to the Supreme Court. And what is this Supreme Court going to do when this case is in front of them? I would argue it doesn't matter if Biden is in office. Yeah. It doesn't matter who's in office. Like, they're going to side with the authoritarian view of things.
Right. The court transcripts will just be 60 straight minutes of laughter. Yeah.
Just fucking doodles and shit.
Yeah.
Garfield drawings.
I love this country.
Yeah. It's... this
that was
is
sarcasm.
Oh, really? No, come on. Yeah, the only U.S. politician who has really said anything of note about this is U.S. Representative Ro Khanna, a Democrat from California, who said, "I oppose the criminal prosecution of Assange. The prosecution of Assange will have a chilling impact on any journalist who publishes information and is a violation of the First Amendment. Assange did many morally suspect things by failing to redact the personal information of civilians and putting them in harm's way, and also coordinating the timing of his releases to wreak havoc in the 2016 election. But one can condemn Assange's actions while not setting a precedent of criminalizing the publication of material that challenges state power." End quote. Yep. And there it fucking is.
Well said.
Like, it doesn't really matter who this is happening to. This is actually a very serious moment in American history. At least if it goes that way, it will be looked back on as very serious.
Absolutely. 100%.
And again, you know, separate the artist from the art.
Right. Yeah. This is just like Tar. It's basically the same moral.
It's exactly like Tar. Right? I feel like this episode is going to be in contention for all the same awards that movie will be.
I'm up for Best Actress. I mean, you know, and Julian Assange is eventually going to like end up composing music for Monster Hunter World.
So not only is that one op-ed writer at The Nation up in arms about this, the most recent development happened just this past week. The list of names opposing the extradition of Julian Assange just became a whole lot more prominent. The editors and publishers of five different media outlets, the New York Times, The Guardian, Le Monde, Der Spiegel and El País published an open letter calling for the United States government to end its extradition and prosecution of Julian Assange. That's actually what got this story back on my radar. I was scrolling through headlines and saw that and was like, that's big.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's especially interesting because this is at the same time a story that you would think mainstream media outlets like the New York Times would be a little angrier about or be a little more vocal about. But you're not hearing a whole lot about it. It's mostly overseas press. And you'll notice that every other outlet that signed that letter is from a different country, not the New York Times. But
well, I mean,
good on the New York Times for doing this still.
But like collectively, they are all from different countries.
Right.
Then, you know, like, because the New York Times is from America. Anyway, I was just including the New York Times within what you were saying.
Anyway. Well, yeah. But also, it's the United States doing this. So you would prefer if, I don't know, maybe the Washington Post signed on, the Wall Street Journal, maybe, you know, like that would also be pretty great.
Yeah. I mean, I would, no way the Wall Street Journal is going to.
No.
Anything like that.
No. And
Washington Post, maybe. We'll see.
And yeah, it was, again, I brought up earlier, the Obama administration didn't decided not to indict Julian Assange on the grounds that they would also have to indict the publishers of that material.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to go, oh, yeah, Trump, he's the authoritarian. He's bringing it back. Now he wants to indict Julian Assange. But so does Obama's VP. Like, Joe Biden is not scaling any of that Trump shit back. And when you couple that with that Obama administration quote, it's kind of easy math that Joe Biden does kind of intend this to be a means of prosecuting journalists for reporting on your errors. Because it's not like he doesn't have anything that people can report on. Like, the withdrawal from Afghanistan was pretty fucking ugly. Granted, it's a thing we were begging Obama to just do.
Like, I mean, it needed to happen.
The entire time. It needed to happen. Well. We just really fucked it up, if you can believe it. So,
wait. You're saying the American Armed Forces fucked something up in the Middle East?
I know. Yes, it's called the Middle East. It's what we fucked up in the Middle East.
Yep.
So this isn't really a bright side, but there has been a change of course within the Australian government also, because Julian Assange is Australian. He's an Australian citizen.
Right.
While Scott Morrison was convinced that this was a matter for the U.S. to worry about and no one else, current Prime Minister Anthony Albanese sees it differently. A few days after that open letter was released, he said he'd raised the issue of Assange with U.S. representatives recently and would continue to do so until the U.S. government drops the matter. He also acknowledged that the Assange case is an issue of great interest to many Australians and of interest to people across this chamber. And that's an important statement because Scott Morrison really did, when he was asked about this, he really did say, that's for the U.S. to worry about.
And it's he was just like, man, I want to fuck Pamela Anderson or something. Like, apparently that was his go-to when she asked him about it.
So it is important that this prime minister came out and said that because at least he's concerned about his citizens. Because that's the thing. At the end of the day, you're the prime minister. You have to at least be like, well, he's Australian. Of course we care. We don't want him.
Right.
But Scott Morrison was a piece of shit.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's similar, you know, it's this whole, like, coalition thing, like, especially with some right-wing asshole like Scott Morrison. And look, I don't know much about Anthony Albanese. I don't know what his politics are particularly, but, like, I'm sure Morrison was much more willing, it seems, to suckle at the U.S. teat.
Yeah, I don't know much about the current state of Australian politics.
Yeah, me neither.
I'm sure they've really come around on immigration since I last checked.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I bet there's no racism in Australian politics at all anymore.
So that's kind of where the Julian Assange story is. We're still waiting to see if he's going to be extradited. It seems like kind of the global feeling on it is that he should not be. Like,
yes.
That part is also crossing some boundaries. Just like the side that wants to have him extradited and prosecuted. That crosses several U.S. government administrations, but there are all sorts of sectors of the world outside of that that are calling for the opposite. And I think it's a perfectly valid point. I do think this is kind of an important moment that we got to hope goes our way.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
The last part I want to talk about is, I mentioned it earlier, but the Chelsea Manning case, what happened there is Chelsea Manning was dealing with WikiLeaks, but also reached out to a hacker named Adrian Lemieux at the time. And if you read the transcripts, it's like, hey, what would you think if I could tell you? Like, it was like the active locations of troops in the Middle East and shit. And Adrian Lemieux turned Chelsea Manning in, reported to the authorities. And
what a dick. How can you call yourself a hacker?
Well, his
do shit like that
argument. And I never really talked to him about this specifically, but I do know his argument was that he legitimately thought people were going to be killed if that information was released in the way they wanted to release it. So I guess to put yourself in his shoes, he kind of felt like, well, yeah, I'm going to be an asshole if I report this, but I'm also kind of an asshole if I don't.
I guess. Yeah.
And I didn't know who Adrian Lemieux was.
Right.
And then he just kind of showed up as a fan of my writing at Cracked.
Mm-hmm.
And what's weird is in 2015, when almost no one was willing to say they even thought Trump could win the Republican nomination, much less win the presidency.
People didn't want to jinx it.
Well, I remember in 2015, Norm MacDonald was actually one of the first people to come out in an interview and was like, oh, this Trump's kind of like Hitler, right? And people were like, okay, has Trump committed genocide? And it's like, it took Hitler a while to get there, you dipshits. But I remember seeing all the uproar around that, and I was like, what are you talking about? Of course Trump is like Hitler. And I wrote a Cracked article about it, and it got something like 6 million page views. And this is like in the thick of Trump announcing that he's going to run. And I wrote this article and was like, of course Trump could win. After I wrote that article, which that's a lot of people to read one article, started showing up in my life after that.
Mm.
And Adrian Lemieux was one of those people who just kind of befriended me after that Cracked article out of the blue. Like I had never gotten, because there's like people who are fans of my work, but I like heard from them before that. they showed up when I wasn't doing political, like I've done political stuff for a long time, but like that's when I like this, my podcast and my writing got really political when Trump was running. Yeah. And that's also when people like Adrian Lemieux showed up. And it's like, dude, you're being nice. And I appreciate if you are a fan, I appreciate it. But also, you turned a motherfucker into the government.
Yeah.
And
that's tough.
I'm sitting here like criticizing the government. So like, fortunately, we never really talked about anything that important because he would always like he would want to like send you an encryption key to be able to talk to him on some strange platform. Right. And it's like, don't trust that either. Yeah. Sorry. I don't.
He's like, it needs to be more secure than like Signal or whatever.
Yeah.
Or WhatsApp.
Yeah. He's like, open the Global Undercover SI app on your phone.
Jesus.
The same people that you give your phone to at the Ecuadorian embassy. And yeah. So I knew that guy. And it was.
That's crazy.
It was weird. And then he died in 2019 in Wichita, Kansas, like 3 months before my first and only ever trip to Wichita, Kansas. And like, we didn't stay in touch enough for me to know that he was going to Wichita. Apparently his family is from there.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't find out that he had died until months and months and months later, because it wasn't like a huge, I still don't really know how I found out. I think like a fucking tweet probably. But yeah, that's my weird side note to the Julian Assange story. I knew Adrian Lemieux. I mean, he seemed like a nice enough guy, but like also you can't like go infiltrate upstart young political writers and be an asshole about it. Like, hey, fuck-faced, the government sent me here.
Yeah.
Tell me who you are.
Yeah.
Follow me on Signal. It's like, you have Signal already?
It must be hard to build trust at a certain point.
Yeah. I would argue we never really built trust.
Well, sure.
We Facebook messaged. And again, he was nice, yeah, but it was weird. It was...
Yeah.
It was really, of all the people to have show up, like having yeah. that guy, it's like, this would be bad for my reputation, right? Like, what's happening here? But also, rest in peace. They still don't know how yeah. he died. He died
RIP.
Under very mysterious conditions. He, I think, was younger than me, and I think his cause of death was like natural causes. Like, they just don't yeah. really know. They think he might have had a drug interaction with kratom, but
he fell and his head fell into a sheet of saran wrap and it got tangled.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Natural causes.
He took acid and got too hysterical and jumped out a window.
Right.
Oh, man. The government, right?
Right? The government.
So cool.
Oh, we have fun.
Oh, we love the gov.
We are fascists.
The government, not us.
I know, not us, not you and me.
So, unless you have any questions about Adrian Lameau or any final thoughts on Julian
I don't,
Assange.
I'm just kind of flabbergasted about that. I mean, it's a crazy thing. And it's crazy that he died. Other than that, I don't really, I don't know.
Yeah, it was strange. It was very strange.
Yeah.
Do we have anything to plug before we get out of here? I think that's our episode, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't arrest Julian Assange.
No, that sucks. I mean, or like, maybe like Sweden should arrest him for like the sexual assault stuff. But like,
right.
All this other stuff, like, whatever. But as for plugs, going back, our Lost Rewatch podcast, nearing the end of season one, having a good time.
Yay, yay.
I'm on the dying social media platform, Twitter. I don't tweet very often unless something insane happens. Like, I don't know, like the sitting president breaking up a union mm-hmm. strike.
That did happen, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know about that until today. And other than that, nothing. No plugs.
I would like to plug adamtoddbrown.substack.com, where you can read my writings. If you would follow me there, I would appreciate it. Also, follow me on Hive Social at Adam Todd Brown. That's Todd with 1D. Trying out the Twitter alternative. I took the leap, tweeted about it, said, follow me on Hive Social. And a bunch of people tweeted back and said, the servers are down for maintenance. And that is a situation that lasted about 2 days. So that tweet was pointless. But, you know, you can follow me there now anyway. And I think that's it. That's good enough. Let's get the fuck out of here. Olivia, say goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye, everybody. We love you. Also, rest in peace, Christine McVie.
Yes, rest in peace.
People of Earth, your planet is about to be destroyed.